This is the Mindful Musical Life Podcast. I'm Kevin Miske. I'm excited to welcome to the podcast this week, Austin Pantzner. Austin is the founder of The Functional Musician, an online coaching company helping musicians live and perform without pain. During his graduate studies at Indiana University, and after switching from tenor trombone to the bigger and heavier bass trombone, he struggled through a three-year injury cycle that led to the creation of a health and wellness system that helps musicians overcome tension, pain, or injury, and sustainably support their lifestyle and career path. Austin has coached a wide range of musicians who work as freelancers, orchestral musicians, college students, jazz musicians, weekend warriors, and rock stars. Austin is certified through the National Academy of Sports Medicine as a personal trainer and exercise specialist, and has additional certifications in nutrition, functional movement, and mobility. All of this training and experience alone would make Austin a fantastic coach and teacher, but the added personal experience of dealing with chronic pain and injury brings his level of understanding to another plane. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I'm sure you will too. So without further ado, here's Austin. Hi, Austin. Thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast. I'm really excited to hear about your program, Functional Musician. So why don't you start us there kind of with a description of what you do and how you got interested in this world?
Yeah, sure thing. Number one, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. It's an honor to be here. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Austin Pantzner. I'm the founder and CEO of The Functional Musician, where I help musicians live and perform without pain through a one-on-one recovery program, as well as an injury prevention course. And it's quite a long journey, long story, but I'll try to be really clear and concise. But basically in grad school, I switched over from tenor to bass trombone. And within the course of 2.5 months, I developed a pretty serious injury. I blew out my left forearm in a jazz band rehearsal. And luckily for me, with ergonomic devices out there, I didn't necessarily have to take time away from school. I had something called an ergobone, which is basically like a bipod, so I could still, for the trombone, so I could still play. But that caused a series of injuries over the course of about 3 years, where I injured my left shoulder, I developed a right shoulder injury, I developed an inability to take a full breath without as free as I wanted to. I was actually experiencing pain when I breathed anywhere, you know, past like 70 or 80%. And I also developed a couple of amateur overuse injuries. I developed a bruise on my lower lip. I developed chronic fatigue. Luckily, I had no sharp pain or tingles in my amateur, but it was quite debilitating. And that led me to look at other career paths, to say the least. And I was about a year and a half, 2 years into my doctoral degree and, you know, struggling. And I was like, okay, well, I'll just finish out my degree. I'll just look for some other side option I could do to, you know, build some skills and make some money and kind of take a step back from the music community just to give my, you know, mental health a breath of fresh air, so to speak. So I became a certified personal trainer with the National Academy of Sports Medicine. And I also pursued corrective exercise specialist certifications with NASM as well as a precision nutrition certification. And the cool thing that happened, Kevin, along the way is I started applying the concepts to myself just to kind of like figure things out and, you know, try to understand the concepts that I was going to teach to someone else. And one of those things, I was like, okay, if I'm, you know, describing a way something feels, I should be able to feel that and describe, you know, that experience myself. And within the span of 3 to 6 months, I started making really drastic improvements that I haven't made before, despite going to a chiropractor for 3 years, an Alexander technique teacher, exploring Feldenkrais, massage therapy, so much massage therapy, as well as 2 bouts of physical therapy as well. And I was like, okay, I'm onto something. Like, this is cool. Like, still feeling a little burnt out from music and trombone, but that's cool. I just want to like be able to live and, you know, do my life if I do decide to give up this career path. And within 3 more months, I could pick up the trombone. I could take a full breath. I had, you know, what some would consider great quote unquote posture. But the most important thing is I wasn't experiencing a debilitating amount of daily pain anymore, which was crazy to me. And I was like, why is that? Like, what's going on? And I continued exploring this path, gaining more certifications. I gained 2 certifications from the Ready State. I gained a certification from Functional Movement Systems, which is like a a way to assess someone's movement, someone's breathing, on a scale as well. And I'm pursuing other certifications just because it's something that I'm so fascinated in. And the more I explore, the more I learn, the more I realize, wow, I don't know that much. Like, there's so much more to learn, and there's so many pieces of the puzzle that, weren't necessarily missing, but we don't necessarily see when we don't have, you know, a holistic, grandiose picture type of thing. But anyway, so long story short, at my time at IU, it's a pretty big music school, right? 2,000 music students at any point, give or take. And I saw other friends of mine, other colleagues going through similar experiences I did, both with going through an injury and necessarily not, you know, recovering to the point where they felt comfortable or confident in their body or themselves. So Indiana University has a business office at the music school, the OECD office, the Office of Entrepreneurship and Career Development. And Elaine Barker and Joni Spain, Nathan Fisher, they all kind of mentored me through the seed of an idea that became the functional musician. And this was all along the lines of, you know, doing coursework, personal training, gaining these certifications, and trying to navigate that. And once COVID hit, you know, I had about four or five certifications under my belt. I was gaining experience training people, and I was seeing some positive results with them as well. And this just kind of all culminated right when COVID happened. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to launch it. And, you know, ever since I haven't looked back, and I've just been moving forward, trying to help other musicians navigate, you know, their pain or injury journey. And I started exploring other options and other avenues as well, such as injury prevention, teaching tools that we necessarily wouldn't get in a body mapping or Alexander technique type of setting, but tools that we can use to holistically manage and deal with the daily aches and pains that are sometimes unavoidable as a traveling or, you know, classical symphony musician.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. There's so many things that we don't get experience with as, you know, student musicians as we're going through undergrad, grad school, etc. Even as professional musicians, that kind of stuff is kind of just brushed under the rug. We don't really spend much time thinking or considering the whole person, right? It's just the musical part of what we do. So what were some of the things that, when you were starting to notice these injuries creeping in, what were some of the things you first noticed? Like, if you think back on it, you know, so thinking someone's listening and they're like, oh, I wonder if I'm kind of heading that direction, what were some of the earliest signs that you've seen in yourself or maybe in your clients as well that could be helpful for others to be aware of?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I honestly haven't reflected that on that in a while. That I love that. Okay. So, so I just started a performance diploma. I had a pretty big performance load. Number one, I knew that going in. I was playing in orchestra, jazz band, started a brass quintet because I envisioned a Midwestern brass quintet touring different areas and going to different schools and venues, with a mission of education and performance. I was taking auditions. I was preparing for a recital. So it wasn't uncommon for me to have days where I was at school from, number one, like 6 a.m. all the way to 8, 9, or 10 p.m., depending on if it was a concert night or if other people were having concerts or if I was just practicing. So during that time, I mentioned before that it just kind of happened so fast, right? Two and a half months. So I didn't really get any sure-tail signs like, you're about to be injured. It was more little things that were happening along the way, like just feeling really tight all the time, like waking up out of bed, maybe feeling like instead of feeling 24, maybe I felt 48 some mornings, or maybe I felt a little bit older. I felt really stiff and rigid. Mm-hmm. And something else I experienced too, I did experience some numbness, some tingling, some electric signals happening throughout my whole left arm from my shoulder, my scapula, front of my chest, bicep, tricep, forearms, all the way to my wrist, to the tips of my fingers. I also did experience some sharp pain every once in a while, but it went away pretty quickly. It only happened for like a second. I would adjust my posture, I would adjust my grip, and it would go away. So I was like, oh, okay, it just must be like one of those fluke things. And I didn't really pay attention to it. Honestly, like I was so dedicated to the process of improving and doing my best and showing up in all of these rehearsals and being quote unquote, the perfect student, that you could say my biggest priority was to you know, be a professional musician and take advantage of all these opportunities, as most of us, when we go into school or grad school or, you know, these opportunities like this, we want to take full advantage of those things. So I necessarily didn't have, but the little red flags that I would say that I would pay attention to now is that tightness, waking up feeling extremely stiff, the numbness, the achiness, the tingling, the occasional sharp pain is kind of those red flags that were all there. Mm-hmm. But I think also more importantly too, it's like reflecting back, I didn't really have any ways to manage that other than ignore it. I was just kind of pushing it off to the side, not acknowledging my body, not acknowledging how I was feeling for the sake of improving, learning more, productivity, or just trying to get stuff done.
Right. Yeah, I can relate so well because I was at IU too, and so I know the environment that breeds and the commitment to just like, oh, I can do one more thing. Oh yeah, sure, I can add one more ensemble. I can add one more side project. I can add one more hour of practicing today, even though I've had the horn on my face for 6 hours already or whatever, right? So at a root of a lot of what you're talking about here is hinges on a musician's ability to listen to their bodies and just be aware of their bodies a bit. So how do you guide musicians into that level of awareness where they're able to listen to their bodies? And it doesn't mean that they can't play. It just means that they need to be aware of what's going on. So how do you kind of set that up or suggest ways for musicians to work on that skill?
Yeah, that's such a great question. So for me, one of the biggest factors of coming back from that injury, as well as the clients that I work with, or I've worked with in the past, is developing a daily movement routine. Something where you can show up for yourself every day, mindfully move your body, check in with how it's feeling. But also on the other end, if things aren't feeling well, you know, get yourself back on track where you know your body's going to be supporting the type of playing you need to do that day or the type of life that you need to do that day. So for example, if I want a daily movement routine might look different from a day where I know I'm going to be 12 hours in the car versus, or be different from a 12 hour travel day versus, you know, maybe I have a double, you know, one day and then two concerts the next day. It's going to be a little bit different because the demands are different, kind of like our playing and our warm up and the fundamentals that we choose to approach our playing with. But something happens when we start mindfully moving a little bit every day. And I'm not talking about, you know, an hour or 2 hours or dedicating yourself to a really intense yoga practice. I'm really talking about just 20 to 30 minutes of movement, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes in the morning, 15 to 20 minutes in the evening before you go to bed, has been a life-changing practice for both me and the people that I work with, so to speak.
So I totally agree that a daily movement routine would be absolutely awesome. And I'm totally in favor of that. In my experience, when I've mentioned things like that to musicians, you know, in regards to a mindfulness practice or anything that's not playing notes, having notes come out of your instrument, right? That the natural tendency is like, oh, that's a waste of time. Right. Mm. So what have you seen as the, like, I mean, I'm sure you've seen millions of benefits and like lots of great positives from a practice like that, a daily movement practice. But how would you kind of push back against that response from a musician that's all too common?
Yeah. So actually I would probably, instead of kind of highlighting the benefits of why a daily movement practice is really important and the benefits that you can get from that, which I'm going to describe, I would actually start by asking, all right, so like, how do you feel about, you know, your brass playing? If we were talking to a brass player, like, how do you feel about your playing on a day-to-day basis? Oh yeah, I feel pretty good. It's like, do you ever have those days, you know, that you just feel really inconsistent? You can't get the air moving as you know, as well as you want to, or do you ever feel, you know, just really tight and it affects your ability to make, you know, a resonant sound or whatever, you know, sound concept that you have in your head? And they're like, oh yeah. It's like, okay, well, how often does that happen? Is that like, you know, once every 6 months, like once every couple months, maybe, you know, is it once a week? And, you know, as you start to dive down, maybe they're starting like, oh yeah, I have a couple of inconsistent days. I have like two or three good days and then two or three bad days. And then, you know, it just kind of goes up and down like that. And it's like, well, why is that? Do you feel like really tight in your body on those off days? It's like, yeah. It's like, oh, do you feel like you have trouble moving air? And if they, you know, they keep, you know, going down that rabbit hole, these are all movement related physical related type of sensations that are in our control. So if someone in the past, you know, when I've had someone, you know, kind of laugh at me, you know, like, oh, why would I move and do all of these things away from my instrument when I could just practice them on my instrument? You know, these are opportunities to have a holistic impact on the way we feel, both in the practice room and out of the practice, out of the practice room and in the practice room, so to speak. And on those days where I'm inconsistent, in the past, I actually found that listening to my body, taking care of my body and meeting it where it is has helped those bad days become really great days, which in terms have, in the grand scheme of things, bigger picture, which we can always be improving. And the picture of where I want to be is not where I am, of course, has made me more of a consistent player over the long term. And whenever I had a bad day in the past, reflecting, whenever I go back to a practice journal, there are like three things that always showed up. I feel really tight and stiff. I can't take the full effortless breath that I need to really make the sound that I want, or I'm working too hard, which is a result of excess tension in the body. So by practicing this daily movement routine, Kevin, you can start developing, number one, body awareness and start recognizing what your body's feeling. But number two, you can also start to explore and experiment with different movements and ways to help your body feel better. And something that people don't think about, especially in a brass community where breathing pedagogy is so conflicting and what's the word that I'm trying to think of? It's so
pretty polarizing, right?
Polarizing. Yeah, exactly. It's like, we don't view breathing as a movement. And if we, and a lot of pedagogy shuns talking about breathing or working on breathing away from your instrument. But one of the things that's really been transformative for me as I continue my movement education is that the breath is a movement, and all physical negative sensations that I have experienced working with clients involve the breath in some way. So by working on our movement, we're working on our ability to breathe. And if we work on our ability to breathe, we're going to work on efficiency of theoretically playing a brass instrument or being able to, you know, inhale or exhale with less tension, which I think will always impact or positively influence how we play a brass instrument.
Absolutely. The focus and the emphasis on breath and moving and using the body to make our instruments, I think it's easier for our string and piano colleagues and vocal colleagues too, in some ways, to get that idea of using your whole body, because, you know, my wife's a violinist, and so you watch a string player play, you watch a violinist play or a cellist, whoever, and there's so much movement happening, right? And so it's really, it's easier to notice if there's tension, if you're, you know, if you're working with a really great teacher that can, that's keyed into that kind of stuff, you can see, oh, there's excess tension in your neck. Oh, your bow arm is too tight, or your hand, your fingers are curling too sharply, or, you know, whatever it might be. It's a little bit easier to see it. But for us as internal instruments, more like our vocal colleagues, a lot of our tensions creep in places you can't see. And so going back to the idea of first being aware of it, what do you suggest, any kind of mindful or awareness techniques to kind of help musicians to at that base level just become more aware of what's going on with their bodies? Do you have specific things that you'd like to work on with musicians?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, one of the things that I do first before I guide someone through a mindfulness practice, unless I'm taking someone, you know, I just met someone and they're like, please watch me play, I'm having tension while I play. If it's a one-off lesson, this is a completely different story. But if I, let's say I start working with someone and I know I'm going to work for them over the next 3 months, or maybe over the next 6 months, what I actually do is I'll develop a daily movement routine for them to perform. And after about 3 or 4 weeks, they really start to develop this internal sense of body awareness. They start being able to recognize, you know, what movement feels like, what breathing should feel like. They start recognizing maybe physical sensations they weren't aware of that they had, that maybe could have some negative, you know, connotations, such as, you know, tension or tightness or fatigue. But if you're not aware of that, there's not really a lot we can do to fix that problem if we're not aware. So simply by going through that daily movement routine, which I highly recommend everybody do, you start developing this deeper level of body awareness, then we can start to ask the questions and start to take a step back and really focus on individual components. For example, let's say we were in a lesson and, you had a student who raises their shoulders, not necessarily during the inhale, because that's something that should happen, but maybe something where they go into the high register and they just start to really scrunch up their shoulders, kind of like someone walking in the rain. Now we have two different scenarios. The first scenario is someone who doesn't have any body awareness at all. And you mention, oh yeah, hey, blah, blah, do you notice that you're raising your shoulders, while you play that high register? Or maybe you're like, hey, come look in a mirror and just tell me what you notice as you go into the high register. And they'll be like, oh my gosh, I'm raising my shoulders, but I had no physical comprehension that I was doing that. Or if you have, option number two, going back to option number one, if you simply saying fix that or now you're aware of this is really helpful. But if they don't have a mirror in front of them all the time and they don't have that physical recognition, it can be very hard for them to correct that over the long term because it's become habitualized. It's become mapped, so to speak. Now, if we have option two where someone's developed this deep internal sense of body awareness and maybe one of their movements involves shrugging their shoulders in the morning, just a little bit, just, 5 or 10 repetitions, in the practice room, the teacher can be like, okay, what do you notice when you go into the high register? Or look in this mirror and tell me what you notice. They're like, oh, I'm raising my shoulders. Okay, because they're already familiar with that movement, because they have that level of body awareness developed, they'll be able to recognize what it feels like to do that. They'll be able to attune to it in the moment. And they'll be like, okay, I'm just going to work on relaxation and remapping that habit back into my playing. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean correcting right away. Habits, take time to replace. But that awareness and that recognition, I think both go hand in hand in the ability to be able to reform that habit towards more tension-free relaxation in that upper body scenario.
Yeah, I think it's a really important point that you made, that it's not just about movement. It's not just about, exercises before you play your instrument, whatever your daily routine of movement looks like. And I'd love for you to explain that a little bit more in depth in just a second, just some examples of some types of movements that work well, in addition to the shoulder shrugging that you just mentioned. But that in addition to those movements, at the same time, you need to be aware of what your body is doing. And so I think what you're working on, in addition to, flexibility and mobility, and to injury prevention, these movement exercises also train our internal awareness of the sensations in your body, so that when you go to play your instrument, you pick up your trombone or you pick up your cello or whatever, and then all of a sudden you're hunching one shoulder, or you're twisting slightly in a way that's not helpful, or whatever it might be, then you can be quicker to notice those kinds of things.
Yeah, 100%. And if you take a look at any high performer musician who is at the top of their craft too, if you just watch the way they physically play, most of them have a really deep connection to what their body is doing. And if we talk about efficiency in terms of, playing the cello or playing a brass instrument with the embouchure, or playing a wind instrument with, all of your flexible, dexterous, if that's a word, fingers, efficiency is going to help you play for longer periods of time, both in a day and over the course of your life as well. So I think that also can become an important part of the conversation.
Yeah, I love that you use the word efficiency, because I had a teacher who was very concerned about word choice and was very intentional about the types of words that we use in our own descriptions and just in our own language talking about our craft. And efficiency is something you can always improve, to me. And then the other word that usually gets thrown around for brass players is endurance. And I mean, that works as well. But for me, endurance is a tank that's constantly being depleted. Whereas efficiency, I can always try to be more efficient through awareness and through movements and through other things that I do outside of just playing excerpts or just playing etudes and exercises, right? You can develop your ability to be more efficient forever, in my opinion, really.
Wow. What a beautiful reframe, Kevin. I love that so much. I'm going to take that and I'm going to make a little quote card, because that is gold.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It's so important, I think, to, and just everything you're saying too, it boils back to the importance of everything we do away from the instrument impacts what we do on the instrument. And it's, you know, and I, the other thing I wanted to ask you about too is the nutrition elements and all the extra health elements considerations that we should be aware of as musicians too. But first, before we do that, can you just talk us through a couple examples of the types of movement that you suggest for musicians, just generally speaking, perhaps?
Yeah. So generally speaking, active and dynamic stretching or movements are, in my opinion, more beneficial than static. And let me just define those for those people who are like, what the heck is he talking about? When we talk about a static stretch, it's really about holding a specific body part or a muscle for 30 to 45, 60 seconds. You see it a lot around social media. If you go to any, or if you get any type of musician injury book that's been written pre-2008, chances are most of the exercises that were prescribed or detailed in that book are static stretches where you just hold for 30, 45, 60 seconds. And there are a time and place for that, but active stretches are where you hold a stretch or a body position or a muscle for 2 to 3 seconds for a period of 12 to 15 repetitions. Hmm. And then a dynamic stretch is you're going through your full range of motion in a controlled manner, not necessarily uncontrolled manner. So it may be doing a slow squat or a medium pace squat. It may be, you know, doing a shoulder raise or lifting your arm up above your head and then lifting it down and doing that for, you know, a period of, you know, 8 to 12 or 12 to 15 repetitions. So when I'm, when I started building a movement routine and how it's evolved now is in the morning, I focus more on active and dynamic stretches where we were just in bed for ideally 7 to 9 hours, depending on your body type, your genetics, a lot of other factors. And you're in, basically in the same position for that period of time. You don't have a lot of movement and you can wake up feeling stiff. So just getting some blood flow, getting some movement, getting some joint health in there can be really helpful and help wake you up quicker. And then the evening, what I love to do is I love to incorporate more active and static stretching. This is where static stretching can be really helpful because it allows you to connect to your breath, allows you to connect to your central nervous system, allows you to decompress at the end of a long day, and connect to what we would call the parasympathetic nervous system, which is your rest, recovery, and digestion switch, so to speak. Now that's to say, I don't do static stretches all the time in the evening. You know, you can mix it up because the most important thing is any movement is better than no movement. But if you were looking for a place to just start, you know, some active, very, you know, full range of motion movements in the morning, and then more slow, methodical, breathing oriented movements in the evening can be very helpful in terms of a daily habit or a daily movement routine approach.
That's great. I think it's also important to remind everybody that what you said is that it's very individualized. It's up to the individual what you need. And so I think, you know, if you have, you know, a health practitioner that you see on a regular basis, you can ask them for some guidance, or you can talk to, if you're a practicing yogi, you can always ask your, you know, your yoga instructors for some suggestions for those kinds of things, or just reach out obviously to you, Austin, to ask for some suggestions. And you have some great resources on your website as well that people can check out that I will link to, but it's thefunctionalmusician.com. And I'll add that to the show notes also. But I'd love to ask you about nutrition and the importance of nutrition, because I'm sure that you've seen plenty of examples of professional musicians who we do not treat our bodies as well as we should when it comes to the things that we consume. So what are some things that you've noticed, maybe your experiences personally, the way when you've changed your nutrition, or that when you've seen in others, the effects that it's had on their musical performance and their just day-to-day lives as well?
Yeah, man, great question. Also, can of worms.
Right, I know. So feel free to tailor that however you'd like it to be. You know, you can focus on one or more elements, but...
Yeah, sure. So let's just look at really quick nutrition from like a 30,000 foot view. But in the United States, nutrition right now mostly consists of highly processed foods that have heightened sugar, fats, and salt. As brass players, we need to be very aware of how much salt we're putting in our body, because if we put too much salt in our body, our chops are going to react in a negative way, so to speak. And I'm sorry for my pauses here. I'm just trying to be very appropriate with the wordage that I'm using, because it's a very, nutrition can be a very emotional experience because it's embedded into our culture. And depending on how you were raised, you're probably going to gravitate towards a certain type of food. But it's also important to know that nutrition, the foods we eat, can vary in nutrition, in vitamins that our body and our mind needs to function at a high level. So a general guideline that I've taken from, or that I'm borrowing from Precision Nutrition, is the higher the processed food, the more it's processed, the less nutrients and vitamins that your body and your mind gets. And at the same time, the more energy that your body is going to use to break down that processed food. On the other end of the spectrum, the less processed food, the less processed a food is, the more nutrients and the more vitamins and nutrients your body and your mind are going to get from that food. So for me, over the years, I've always been really fascinated in nutrition, which kind of led me towards that. Also with a recommendation from one of my trainers I was studying with. So nutrition always kind of came natural to me in terms of, you know, eat whole foods, you know, go for balanced meals, you know, kind of recognize and check in with how you're feeling emotionally as you're eating the food. But when we talk about nutrition, with playing an instrument, we just kind of want to be aware of, number one, how foods make us feel, not necessarily emotionally, but physically. Oftentimes we'll eat foods when we are feeling stressed, overwhelmed, anxious, angry, frustrated, sad, or happy, you know, if we're celebrating type of thing. But foods will also make us feel physical sensations as well. So for example, I've noticed just from cutting things and experimenting with taking things in and out of my diet, or sorry, not diet, nutrition, because diet is a temporary nutrition plan, temporary. So nutrition is just, you know, what your body and your mind needs on a daily basis. So anyway, so going back to that, so I've noticed that eating bananas in the morning give me more energy and focus all the way up to lunchtime. Hmm. I've noticed that over time, eating white breads give me headaches quite a bit. I've noticed that eating fast food such as Chick-fil-A or Arby's or Taco Bell or McDonald's, which were actually my go-tos in undergrad a lot, also gave me extreme headaches. They made me tired. They made me sad. They made me feel sluggish. I'd have like a mental fog. So for me, when I'm eating foods, I'm not necessarily trying to eat whole foods and less processed foods 100% of the time, but most of the time I have like an 85% rule where 85% of the time I want to give my body and my mind foods that make it feel good, that make me feel good. And because I've kind of like with moving your body, if you move your body on a daily basis, you start discovering things that make it tense, make it tight, that doesn't make it feel good, such as, you know, periods of prolonged sitting or being in one position. Same thing with nutrition. As you start to give yourself every day really healthy vitamins and nutrients, such as apples, bananas, you know, chicken, just as an example, because that's literally what I ate today, and eggs, you start to develop a deep sense of body awareness of how those foods make you feel, both mentally and physically. And I think you definitely want to eat what you eat. You know, everybody's going to have a different budget. But I also think, you know, recognizing we only have one body and that we need to take care of it is also extremely important. And likewise, you know, if I go and eat as a brass player, you know, some, you know, like a pound of pasta or a pizza or a cheeseburger and fries before a performance, that excess salt, fat, and sugar are going to affect how I play. It's going to affect how I feel. And it affects how I play from a physiological standpoint of the excess salt, sodium, sugar, but also that excess salt, sodium, and sugar affects how the rest of my body feels, not just my embouchures. So there's this relationship, holistic 30,000 foot picture, where all of the foods I eat affect how I feel as a human being. And because I'm feeling a certain way as a human being, that's going to affect how I play. So it kind of goes full circle there.
Yeah. The connection of, again, this is coming back to kind of our baseline topic, which is awareness, right? The awareness of what do I feel like after I eat X, or what do I feel like if I eat X before I perform or before I have to practice or have a lesson or whatever it might be. I notice the same things. If I eat a huge meal that's like super high in salt and, you know, everything else, even if I try to drink 3 glasses of water or whatever, my body still has to process all that extra salt. So I go sit down to play and I feel gross. I feel bloated. I feel like I can't breathe as deeply. My chops feel dry. My eyes feel dry. You know, my brain feels sluggish, all that kind of stuff. Where if I really think about it and remember what those sensations are like and what I'm trying to achieve in terms of a body sensation or a mental sensation or whatever it might be, then if I eat something that's a little bit more balanced, you know, like some, like a sauteed vegetable chicken and rice dish, or, you know, some, a nice big salad or something like that, where I'm going to have a more balanced kind of sensation in my body when I go to play, and it's going to be easier. Right. So thinking about, you know, the cost benefit analysis of choosing those kinds of foods, you know, it's not just that you're going to feel better, but it's also that you're going to create a better product on your instrument. You're right. So, and then that as a result also influences how you feel about yourself as a performer, as a musician. It influences your mental health. It influences your professional developments. It influences your success on your instrument. And it's just like this ongoing, going cycle. It's just forever. And I appreciate too that you said that nutrition, you know, is a long-term thing, whereas diet is a short-term nutritional change or tweak, whatever it might be. And that we can experiment, and it's not an all the time thing. It's not that you can never have a fast food cheeseburger again in your entire life, right? It's that maybe you shouldn't have that as your like go-to lunch 5 days a week or something like that. Right. So, and, mm-hmm. and nothing, if nothing else, just ask yourself how you feel after you eat something like that, or after you make certain nutritional choices based on different things.
Yeah. 100%. I resonate with all of those things. And I saw this quote the other day. I'm probably going to butcher it, but I think it's worth mentioning, is that especially in America, we've grown accustomed. We have this social norm where we've kind of flip-flopped that nutrition and diet, where whenever you ask about someone's nutrition, they'll be like, oh, I'm on X diet, rather than, oh yeah, I'm approaching this and just trying to, you know, nurture my body and nurture my mind with nutritious foods. We've kind of flip-flopped, and people start looking at you weird when you start calling it nutrition. And I'm trying to like break that norm a little bit, but I saw that quote and I was like, oh my gosh, it's so true. It's so true. So
if someone's interested in starting down this path of nutrition and maybe making some changes, again, what do you suggest is like some good first steps?
Yeah. So going to precisionnutrition.com, they have a fantastic blog. They have a lot of great starter guides. What I love about it is it's habit-based. Precision nutrition is a habit-based type of way of approaching nutrition. And that's really important, because going back to diet culture, you know, it's a temporary change in one's nutrition plan, temporary change. And oftentimes diets fail because it doesn't become embedded in their lifestyle. And precision nutrition is, again, trying to break that norm, where they're trying to influence habits that support the type of life, human, and person you want to be by choosing more nutritious foods. And also recognizes too that we are creatures of habit. And in order to, we can't necessarily get rid of a habit, but we can replace it with a new one. And that's kind of what they're getting at. And they have a ton, they have over, I think, 10,000 articles now that you can research on different types of foods. What are carbs? What are fats? What are carbohydrates? I think I already said that, and they'll also give you, you know, steps to take towards starting that path.
That's great. I'll add that website to the show notes as well. Precisionnutrition.com. If people want to check that out, it's a great place to start. I think what I appreciate about our discussion today is that it's very much exploratory based. It's like it's not like a hard line dogma where it's like, in order to be successful on your instrument, you must do, you know, this many minutes every day of movement, and you have to eat this specific diet and everything else. I'm sure you could find that from somebody, but I feel like a more flexible and exploratory approach to the holistic side of being a musician is a really great way to go. So I'm sure there's a lot of people who are listening who are really excited about what you're doing and your program and all this great information that you have to share. So if they would like to get in touch with you, what are some of the best ways to go about that?
Sure. So I have a very active social media channel on Instagram @TheFunctionalMusician. I post a lot of informative posts. I also post mobility posts. You know, every Monday, I call it Monday Mobility. And there it links to my website, thefunctionalmusician.com, where you can find information on my recovery program. If you're someone who's experiencing pain, negative symptoms that are affecting your playing or ability to live, as well as overcoming an injury. And then I also have another program, an injury prevention program, that's going to launch in January of 2023, where you can learn a little bit more about the tools you can use to take care of your body. And that goes through about 6 to 7 different types of movement tools and movement practices that you can explore and kind of create your own customized daily routine, which is the ultimate goal. But those are mostly the places that you can find me. I also have a blog where I post a couple of times a month on topics that are on my mind or topics that we want to consider as we move forward as musicians.
That's great. Austin, there's so many more questions that I'm sure we could dive more deeply into. But I think we'll save that for our next interview. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I'm sure our listeners did as well. So I just want to say again, thank you so much for your time and your expertise. And I look forward to our next conversation.
Looking forward to our next conversation, and thank you so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again to Austin for joining me this week. And thank you all so much for listening. You can keep up to date on all new episodes by following me on Instagram at Mindful Musical Life, or by visiting the website, mindfulmusicallife.com, where you can also get in contact with me directly to ask questions or suggest topics or guests for future episodes. Heading into the fall semester, I will be expanding my one-on-one personalized mindfulness coaching. And if you would like more information about that, you can reach out via my website or Instagram to schedule a free consultation. Thank you again so much for listening, and see you next time.